This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Still to come straight ahead, Carter Hutton drops by the program at the top of the hour. A little tour around the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. We're down to the conference final now, folks. But if you're listening to a show like this, watching a show like this, you already knew that. Mark Spector joins the second hour as well. We'll go through what's next for the Edmonton Oilers and how well they stack up against the juggernaut Dallas Stars. In the meantime, Kristen Shelton joins me from ESPN. On the Craig Berube story today, Kristen introduced officially as the new head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kristen, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm well. Okay, before we get into Craig Berube, have you made your list? When Brad Treliving came out and said, I spoke to nine people, have you started to make your list of who you think the nine are? We can knock down Todd McClellan. We can knock down Gerard Gallant. We all do wonder about if there was a conversation with Dale Hunter at the London Knights. Have you started to make your list?
I mean, in my mind, I just thought there just wasn't a whole lot of time between you fired Sheldon Keefe on May the 9th and you hired him on Friday, and you met with Berube extensively, apparently. We know you, and you're saying you met with up to nine people? That's a lot of people.
I do wonder how many of those were just sort of quick phone calls, just check-ins.
Hey, you up? Text, like, you interested?
Yeah, hey, you up? Jay Woodcroft, you up? 2:30, Brad. What are you doing? I can call you in the morning. I did think that was interesting as well. And I did kind of get a giggle considering what happened the next day with the Blue Jays, how he apologized for a 4:59 announcement on a Friday of a long weekend, which I'm sure everybody appreciated. But other than those two things, Kristen, what were your main takeaways from this morning at the Ford Performance Center?
Yeah, you know, I think that it was really just the focus on, you know, how are you going to, you know, use this core essentially to get the team over the hump. Just so many questions even for Berube about, I mean, do you want to keep these players? Do you think that they have it in them to eventually, you know, help the Leafs get past their postseason demons? And where do you see the changes that have to happen? And it was all very focused on, you know, the core conversation, which I think is going to dominate the Leafs' entire summer. And Brad Treliving essentially said that is there's going to be a busy summer of assessing this roster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for Berube to say, you know, it was an attraction for him, the core players, the great players that they have here, you know, does that indicate that he would have come in and said, hey, well, if you're going to trade two of them away, then I'm not interested? Or is he saying, well, I think there's such a great overall group here, that, you know, that there can be changes and still this could be an even better team. But I think the one thing that really stood out to me is the way that he said, there's good players here that they can become something not better, but just something different. And it's North, it's fast, and it's like, it's just playing hard, predictable hockey. And that's what we've talked so much about the Leafs being creative. They haven't been all that predictable in terms of just knowing what you're going to get out of them every night. And I think that's what Berube is going to try to deliver here.
I'm really glad you mentioned that because my first thought on it was, are they going to turn this team, who is one of the best East-West teams offensively, like in the offensive zone, is Craig Berube looking at this and saying, this team needs to be more table hockey? Everybody has their lane and that's it. We're going north. We're going north. We're going north. We're going north fast. We're going north hard. But we are a table hockey team now. Did you read into it that way?
I did. And you know what? I thought of a comment that Keith had made when he first took over the team. And he said, you know, I just want these players to do what they do best. I want them to have the freedom to feel like they can do what they do best. And you could see over time how Keefe really tried to dial that back and be like, no, let's stop playing like, you know, five individuals when we're out there and we've got to get some cohesion here. Like we've all got to get on the same page here. And this is sort of the opposite from Berube. Like he's saying, no, we're all going to play the same way. We're all going to do the same thing and everyone is going to use their skill set, but this is the structure. Hmm. It was very much about like, this is the structure we're going to do. And it almost felt like he was saying, figure out how to do what you do best, but it's not going to be a free-for-all where everyone's trying to pick up what someone else is trying to do and everyone's out there trying to, you know, wheel and deal their own way. At least that's how I kind of interpreted it.
Yeah.
And it was, I just remember so vividly thinking, in the beginning, it worked, you know, you had that initial boost under Keith because everyone thought we're going to, you know, we had structure more under Babcock, and then it sort of went a different direction. But in the end, it didn't work for them. And so now Berube is going to come in and it seems like really establish something early about how this is how Maple Leaf hockey will be.
I would have to imagine that the conversations about roster construction, even though Brad Treliving sort of, you know, punted this one to a few weeks. Oh, you know, we are focused on the coaching search and we have amateur meetings and pro scouting meetings. And then we're going to get around to the roster, et cetera, et cetera. I really do have a hard time believing that he wouldn't have had the conversation with Craig Berube about what this team is going to look like if he gets everything done that he wants to do. How different do you think this team that Craig Berube is going to coach next year looks?
I think it has to look different because there's question marks already, especially goaltending. He was asked about the goaltending and really just shut that question down because you know that there's a style of goaltender that he wants, and he's already told Brad Treliving what that is. So Treliving's job is to try to find it. Then there's the defense philosophy. You have this, you know, sort of piecemeal defensive group that just didn't get it done often enough this year. What's that going to look like? You know that Berube has a specific philosophy about that too. That's where you can build. Now, if you're hamstrung still with your, you know, your cap and it's invested in the players it's invested in, it can't be massive sweeping changes unless you do make a trade and free up some cap space. But I think that the changes that you're going to see primarily will be defensively and obviously in who they pick with the goaltending. And that will be such an indication of what sort of philosophy that they really are leaning into because the goaltending obviously was a huge part of what got, you know, of why Berube was successful when he was in St. Louis. And that's definitely going to, I think, tell us a lot about where they're going. But again, like as much as you want to say there's going to be big changes, without more cap space, there's only so much that can happen in year one.
Yes. Okay. Glad you got us there because then let's take that one step further now. So I do wonder, Kristen, and fans hate hearing this, but here we go. I wonder if this is a summer where, to your point, this is a team that needs flexibility and needs cap space in order to maneuver. I wonder if Brad Treliving goes into this summer and says, okay, in order to get what we want, we have to be prepared to lose trades. We have to be prepared to make trades that our fans look at and say, what are you doing? But all the while understanding that in a salary cap universe, salary cap space is a commodity. And we need to start thinking about it more so than ever before. Agree, disagree with that one.
You know, I think there is definitely something to that. I think that the Leafs have played it safe because they've had to. They haven't been able to take necessarily big swings since investing in what they did. They haven't really rocked the boat in terms of what they've done, and it just hasn't gotten them anywhere. The decisions that they've made have put them in the exact same position of we're a 100-point-plus regular season team that cannot last more than 10 days in a postseason, you know, outing. It just, it hasn't gotten you anywhere yet. Playing it safe, of running it back, of putting your faith, you know, putting your faith in people, and I get it. Like, I understand you don't want to be wrong and you don't want to say like, these are great. They're great players. There's no one's denying these are great players and that they, you know, it's not about how good they are. It's just, is the combination working for this team? And is it going to be enough to stick with it for one more, you know, one more go? We'll see how it goes. But then is it another wasted year? Is it another, you know, the players aren't getting any younger either. And so there's a lot, I think, to unpack there, but they've played it safe. And maybe this is just the time where you've got to do something that feels like you're really trying to make a difference. And I actually think fans would like that. Mm-hmm. I actually think the fans would appreciate saying, hey, let's at least try something different and see where that gets us.
Let me swing back to Berube here. And I'm curious how much value you place on a coach that has won the Stanley Cup before. Now, I'm not trying to devalue the fact that someone won a Stanley Cup. I think it's a miraculous achievement. It's what everyone's after every season. It's, you know, the thing that everybody dreams about growing up as a hockey player and eventually a hockey coach. But when you consider that the list is three deep of coaches that have won Stanley Cups with multiple teams, Tommy Gorman, Dick Irvin, and Scott Bowman. Bowman won it with three, and that's it. How much stock do you put into, well, he's won the Stanley Cup before?
That's such a good question, and I was surprised when I found out how few coaches had ever won multiple teams, because you never think about it that way. You think about the coaches who have won multiple cups, but then you're like, oh yeah, no, but they did it with the same team.
Yep.
And so first of all, it's really hard to win a Stanley Cup. Let's acknowledge that. And I don't know that I put so much emphasis on the fact that Berube won it. To me, it's more how he did it, that he came in and he took a team that was last in the standings. I mean, we all know the lore of that 2019 team. It was more just that the way that the players responded to him that, to me, is why you can kind of maybe put a little bit more of an emphasis on him. Because we know, I think it was only Larry Robinson with the Devils who was ever the interim who came in and was able to take a team.
Yep.
And so that's, you know, there's only two guys that have ever done that, and Berube is one of them. So there's different ways that I think you can look at it and kind of assess. But what... it's less to me about the fact that he won a cup, but more how the players responded to him coming in and to his philosophies. And I don't believe, and this is just my perspective, I don't think that he was the problem in St. Louis. I don't think it was the coaching that, you know, that team was just, I think that they are built perhaps not to win right now. So I don't think that him being fired was necessarily a reflection of Berube in turn, but I digress from there. But in questioning the can past performance when it comes to winning a cup really extend into future, I just think that there's something to Berube and his I think the way that players respond to him and the way that players talk about him is just, it's just different. There's just something different about him. I'm curious to see if it's going to be different for Toronto as well, because he really is just very respected by players.
I'm with you on Berube and St. Louis. Like, I think we can all be honest. Like, the reason the St. Louis Blues had that slow fall apart was they let go of, they couldn't come to an arrangement with Alex Pietrangelo, who wanted to stay and wanted, you know, no movement protection to make sure that him and his family could stay there. And that wasn't going to happen. And ever since then, what have the St. Louis Blues tried to do? They've brought in a bunch of other defensemen who each do sort of what Alex Pietrangelo does, but not all at once. To me, that was the beginning of the end. When it was over for Pietrangelo, in my estimation, it was over for those St. Louis Blues, which gets me to my next and final question here. And that is, when you look at how Craig Berube was successful with that St. Louis Blues team, and if you believe that that's the model that he wants to replicate with the Maple Leafs, because there was a lot of talk. Like, Berube kept going back to this idea, I wrote it down here, the idea of, you know, composition, what this team looks like. Where's the actual quote here? Oh, yeah, build teams and how we want to play. I can't help but thinking about the blue line, because you look at that St. Louis Blues play. I mentioned Alex Pietrangelo, Jay Bouwmeester's there. It was like, that is a big, strong, mobile blue line. They don't have that in Toronto. Do you think that that is job number one for Brad Treliving? Like, we've already heard about Seth Jones and Brett Pesce and Chris Tanev, etc. I know a lot of Maple Leafs fans watching Vancouver are probably thinking about Nikita Zadorov as well. But do you think that that is job one for this group now?
I think that's 1A. And then, like we talked about, 1B is the goaltending. But the defense, to me, You saw the teams that have gone the farthest in the playoffs. We can even look at the four teams that are about to embark on the conference final. What do they all have? They've got good defense, and they're strong. There's a sense that you know, Berube mentioned, like, it's not about running guys into the boards. It's about, you're not getting pushed off pucks. You're not getting outworked. You're not getting beat down low. It's just, that's what the, you know, and Brad Treliving, to his credit, he's tried to bring in a couple of pieces here and there who can start to kind of embody that. And I think that the construction of that defense core and how they're going to put that together, that's the area where they can have an impact. Their forward groups, they can fill in on the edges and they can do what they've been doing there for the last couple of years. But the defense is really where you've got to make strides, because that's, I think, Berube's emphasis is going to be on, if he wants to play a North game, that's got to start from, you know, that's got to start from the red line out. And it's got to be something that, you know, is obviously embraced by your forwards, but it has to start with who you have on the blue line. And that's going to be a typical kind of player. There's going to be change there. Absolutely, there has to be. But I think, to your question about whether that's the most important thing, I would think that as much as we talk about on the outside, oh, what about the core? What about the this and that? I bet more of their conversations were about, how are we going to set a defensive tone so that teams don't come in and think, oh, you know, all we have to do is shut down their stars and we're golden against the Leafs, right? You've got to change that mindset.
Excellent points. Kristen, thanks as always for stopping by, sharing your expertise. Really appreciate it. We'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
There she is, the great Kristen Shilton from ESPN, commenting on the Craig Berube press conference this morning. One other thing to consider, too. The best players that Craig Berube has ever coached include, we mentioned Alex Pietrangelo, Ryan O'Reilly, Claude Giroux with the Philadelphia Flyers. Those are the ones that come to mind right away. He's never had an Austin Matthews. And I think that's what a lot of people are going to be curious about here. How does Craig Berube handle and coach Austin Matthews? Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, bet local. Maddie Marchese with no games tonight. What are we talking about here?
Stanley Cup odds. And when we look at what Sports Interaction has put up for us, Florida leads the way at plus 230, the lowest odds. Dallas plus 240, Edmonton plus 280, and New York plus 320. So now what I gather is, I made the exact same face
really,
as you did. Because so they think that Dallas Edmonton is a lot closer than, well, not a lot, but closer than Florida, New York. And I struggle with that one.
I'm not so sure that I see it that way.
Yeah.
Specifically, I think if the Florida Panthers make the mistake. Like, here's the interesting thing about this series. We all know how the Florida Panthers like to play.
Mm-hmm.
They like a rough brand of hockey.
Yes.
The problem with that is you run the risk of putting the New York Rangers on the power play. And as we've seen, led by Chris Kreider, that power play is deadly.
Yeah.
And that is doom. Now, do I think that Paul Maurice and their team changed the way they play because of that? No, but it is something in the back of your head. And if looking for an avenue for the Rangers to win, to me, it goes through the power play and Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, and I look at the other series with Dallas and Edmonton, and I'm like, Dallas is rolling right now. They disposed of Colorado.
Dallas looks good.
And they've, you know, they got the goaltender playing well.
Listen, man, if Dallas can do this and get to the Cup Final, they will have knocked off the defending Stanley Cup champions, the Stanley Cup champions from the year previous, and
Connor McDavid.
In the world, Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
No easy route to the Stanley Cup for the Dallas Stars.
Nope.
That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Carter Hutton coming up in moments. Keep it here.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome back to the program. Still to come this hour two, we'll have a conversation with Mark Spector from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca about the Oilers and what's next for them. And Spec's thoughts on how they fared in the seven games against the Vancouver Canucks. In the meantime, pleased to be joined by, from Daily Faceoff, former NHL goaltender, the one and only Carter Hutton, who joins us from God's country. How are you today, Carter?
Jeff, I'm doing good, buddy. The sun is out. There's no snow. Things are looking good. It's playoff hockey time.
It is. And listen, the temptation is always there to ask like a million goaltending questions. Because to me, it's the most interesting position of any position on the ice, but I just don't want to limit our conversation to goaltending. So let me do a couple of wide brush thoughts, and then I want to drill down on Artur Shelofs. But first, your thoughts on the series that we just saw, the All-Canadian matchup, Vancouver and Edmonton. It goes seven games. Last two games kind of felt like a tilted rink here, but how did you see it, Carter?
You know, I felt that, you know, I think that Edmonton kind of found their game offensively, and obviously the injuries hurt. You know, I think Artur Shelofs came in and did a great job. Losing Thatcher Demko is a tough loss. You know, that is a guy that is a leader. He's really become one of the better goalies in the NHL, and losing Brock Besser for game seven obviously stings. And for me, I think the ice got tilted a little bit. In that sense, you know, they really struggled slowing them down. And for me, it was the action from the point. I think just getting pucks through to the net, I think that's where Shelofs struggled a little bit. And I think Edmonton did a great job. Bouchard, 20 points as a, you know, in the playoffs is amazing as a D-man. And for me, it was the tale of, you know, Calvin Pickard coming in and kind of just being enough to get them through, get Skinner a little bit of rest. And I think the way they protected him in game six, where I thought he struggled early on, every rebound looked questionable. And then in game seven, I thought he was good enough to get the job done.
When you look at this series, like there's always a couple of emerging stars. Like there's always players that pop. And I think for Edmonton, like if you didn't already know the story about Evan Bouchard, you know now. And one of the great stories, and I just want to get to him flat out right away here. Man, Artur Shelofs, like going back to the World Championships last year, he became the beginnings of a real story here. But these playoffs, he's been fantastic. How much, I mean, spend the first part of this conversation saying, well, it's not really about him. But when you look at Shelofs, how much do you say is about him? And how much do you say is about the goaltending coach, Ian Clark?
You know, there's obviously the goaltending coach, and his athletic ability is so impressive for me. A guy that I actually had this conversation with my dad today on the phone, you know, talking about game seven from last night. We're getting the rundown, and he was like, you know, Shelofs is just so small compared to Skinner. And I said, well, no, he's 6'4". It's the way he plays, his athleticism. He's more where Skinner's deeper, presents himself bigger. And for me, I think you're going to see a growth curve with Shelofs too, which I love is the fact of, you know, for me, the comparison right now would be a little bit to like a Jeremy Swayman. When Swayman first came in, he was super aggressive outside his post, chasing the game, where now you watch Jeremy Swayman and the game looks easy to him. And I think Shelofs is going to mature. And some of the saves he made, even last night to start the game, the save on Kulak coming down off the rebound,
his athleticism,
the way he sees it. And I think for Ian Clark, these are the goalies that, you know, great goalie coaches want. They have that ability. They're outside the box. Mm-hmm. Now, what can we as an organization do to make him a better goalie? And I think the sky's the limit for him. You know, what a great experience for him coming in here.
So here becomes the question then. Do the Vancouver Canucks legit have another one? Like, I don't want to say that this is fool's gold, but I mean, we've seen goaltenders get hot in the playoffs before. There's a history of this, whether it's Steve Penny or Blaine Locker, like go right down the list. We've seen this happen before. But do you think the Vancouver Canucks have a legit one here and this isn't fool's gold?
I truly do believe that, right? You know, there's always those times where you think of a goalie coming in, a younger guy. I think I've experienced this a lot in my career where they come in and you play on emotion, right? And it's easy. Guys come in and they shoot the lights out right away and you're like, wow, this guy's so good.
Yeah.
And then that sustainability comes in. Can you be a pro? Can you get to that level where he has the skill set, where now the problem is you have Thatcher Demko, who's really not going anywhere, right? So where do they go with him next year? Because you don't really want to sit him on the bench where he's going to play 20 games. You want him to develop and grow into something more than he can be. And for me, I think going into this series, I think everyone labeled like Vancouver's got their number three goalie in the net. Well, no, technically he's their number two. He's just at a point in his career where he's better to play in the American, play 60 games in the American League instead of be on the bench, you know, backing up, where Casey DeSmith into his 30s, a guy that's reliable in that sense.
You know, there are a couple of spectacular moments in this one. You mentioned the Kulak save. I know part of it was Ian Cole, but that, I mean, Dreisaitl thought, everybody in Vancouver thought that on that Dreisaitl one-timer on the power play, everybody bet that this thing was going in. When you start to see saves like this, the Kulak save, the Dreisaitl save, like as a goaltender, what goes through your mind? Like, what are you seeing there? Because for me, I look at it, and maybe the most famous example of this is Marc-Andre Fleury just sort of abandoning system in the dying seconds of a Stanley Cup win and just throwing his body at Nick Lidstrom and making that save in the dying seconds of the Penguins' first Stanley Cup with Sidney Crosby. Do you look at that and say, that's a goaltender just saying, I don't care what the system is, I just need to make a save here?
Yeah, which is for me, honestly, Jeff, like great to see in a sense, right? I think working with younger goalies now, being on the rink where I was like that, I just had that street hockey mentality in me, right? Compete, stop the puck. I used to joke, I had a goalie coach in Nashville who's still there, Ben Vanderklok. Yep. We'd call it a bulldog mentality. That was my mentality, where when I learned to be a little bit more structured, but for Shelovs, it's able to break that form and still be technical to create consistency, but at the same time, just at the end of the day, keeping the puck out is all that matters. And he did a great job of that last night. That save with his glove was unbelievable. Just the compete to get there. And obviously the play by McDavid is world-class. You don't see many guys get the puck in that area and have the poise to make that pass. And even the one that went off the boards to get across a net and lunge and not just play structure, not get there, but actually have the awareness of where the puck is going to compete to make those saves. It was impressive to watch. And his athleticism is through the roof. And again, I just can't wait to see where this grows once he gets it kind of honed in with experience.
Okay, I want to do more on this coming up a little bit later on in the program, but you want to hear Whopper Carter?
Yeah, I would love to.
The Tampa Bay Lightning have acquired, or I should say reacquired, Ryan McDonagh.
Oh, wow.
And a fourth-round draft pick in 2024 from Nashville in exchange for a second-round pick. How did Nashville still have a second-round pick available? A second-round pick in 2025 and a seventh-round pick, Tampa's, in 2024. A goalie's best friend, Ryan McDonagh, true or false?
Yes, he is. He is a guy that is consistent, and I think that's a hole in their lineup that they missed, right? Obviously, there's something that they saw moving him out, and the way he played in front of Saros was impressive this year, especially with, you know, they gave up limited shots against Vancouver, which obviously Vancouver continued to keep the quantity down, and they just tried to capitalize on their quality.
That's a really fascinating one. I wonder what the follow-up move now is for the Nashville Predators. It's funny, too, you know, when Tampa was winning their Stanley Cups and every year they'd have to like get rid of players. Oh, Alex Killorn is gone and Andre Palat is gone. There's always going to be like that one player that's like that one player too many. I personally always thought that player was going to be Palat. You know, like, okay, they lost Tyler Johnson. You know, they lost Barkley Goodrow, like all players going. I always thought the one player that was going to be the one player too much was Andre Palat. I was wrong. It was Ryan McDonagh the whole time. And, you know, one of the things, I think it was Todd Gill, or no, sorry, who was it? Who was it was on with us that was telling the story? Hal Gill was mentioning here on this program a few weeks ago that in the NHL, he felt the defenseman that got to position the quickest was Ryan McDonagh, because we always think about the shot blocks and defending and making it really easy in the defensive zone. He said, nobody gets to position quicker than Ryan McDonagh. When you think of that player, Carter Hutton, what goes through your mind? Because now he's back with the Bulls. So if there's any idea that Tampa is going to start to tear this thing down and look at the next, not a chance. They just picked up Ryan McDonagh again. They're swinging this thing back.
Yeah, I think that goes out the window when you get a guy like that, right? Because he is a leader and he wants to win. And I think when Gil talks about that is the fact of just his hockey IQ, right? Getting to place first, because he's obviously a great skater, but you talk about the new generation of player, a little bit older guy, you know, everybody can skate now, right? For the most part, everyone is a good skater. It's that hockey IQ to get in those positions, to be there, to be ready, and to sacrifice, right? And I think those are guys, like in my opinion, that I always love playing with. I never played with Ryan, but similar players, right? I think about like a Shea Weber, a guy that would sacrifice his body. These are the guys that like drag you into the fight come playoff time, right? There's nights where it's not going to be going. The team isn't going to be, maybe you're fighting it a bit, but he's out there, a leader, a veteran guy, and he's sacrificing his body and the way he thinks and sees the game, it kind of makes everybody better around him as well.
With Carter Hutton from Daily Faceoff, former NHL netminder, I do want to ask you about, listen, we started the show off an hour early. We covered the Craig Berube press conference. He wasn't your head coach when you were with St. Louis, but he was very much on the bench. Do you have a thought about what Toronto is getting with Craig Berube?
You know, kind of similar to the Ryan McDonagh thing. Chief is a guy that, you know, wears it on his sleeve, right? He's emotional. He demands a lot. And I think in this day and age is something that gets, you know, we always talk about, you know, like a softer player nowadays and you need to, you know, treat players with white gloves, but he is a guy that will demand a lot of his players, but he also rewards his players too. Like, trust me, this isn't a guy that's just going to come in and berate you every period and make it hard on you in that sense.
Yeah.
You know, he puts things in place for you to be successful. And I think he built a great relationship. When I had him in St. Louis, that was a year before he came over. After the season, they let Mike Yeo go.
Yep.
Craig came over. Everyone knows the history there, right?
Yeah.
In that sense, going on to win the Stanley Cup. They had a veteran team, but I think Craig also does a great job of talking to younger players, communicating their role, where sometimes I find in hockey, Jeff, honestly, yeah. is the lack of communication. Like, hey, you're doing great. And then they send you to the minors, where I think there's a lot of value in being black and white, being, hey, this is your role. This is what's expected of you. And I think Craig does a great job of that throughout the lineup, right? It's a demanding league, right? There's a lot that's given to these players, but at the same time, I think the clarity in that is a great job that Craig does.
Okay, let me drill down on a couple of netminders here in the 5 or 6 minutes I have left with you. I am really curious to see this Florida-New York series for a number of different reasons. One, I just love the way the Florida Panthers play. The New York Rangers playing a really exciting brand of hockey. Two completely different teams, but two teams that aren't shy about physicality as well. But they also have two standout netminders. When you see Sergei Bobrovsky play, when you see Igor Shesterkin play, are they more similar or more different stylistically? What should we look for here?
So it's a little bit different. Honestly, like, Bobrovsky's kind of altered his game now. He's come a little more robotic in his process and the way he manages it. For me, I think a big thing in the series that I'm going to have to watch is the emotional swings, right? Igor is a guy that kind of wears it on his sleeve, right?
Yes.
You can get in his kitchen a little bit. He gets heated. You could see him. I had a quote the other day about Hammerhand from Slapshot, you know, losing his mind during a game. And Igor does that at times. And sometimes that can be a weapon, but sometimes it can kind of hinder you. Where if you watch Sergei play, his maturity and experience, whether he gets scored on or he scores a goal, just his way he like resets and refocuses himself, something I had to use in my career a lot, where at times I would be super emotional. Even if we scored, I would get so high, and next thing you know, they're coming down and I'm giving up a goal because I'm more worried about the emotion. So I think that's going to be key. And I think for the New York Rangers, this is going to be a bit more of a challenge, right? You face Charlie Lindgren, and Freddie Anderson at times was good and at times struggled. I think Sergei's numbers aren't great so far, but I think there's a couple games, if you pluck those games out of there, he's made a ton of timely saves, high danger chances, and he's going to be a different maker. So this is going to be a great battle. I'm really looking forward to the old Russian versus the young Russian.
So this analogy may be strained, but let me see if it lands with you at all. So you mentioned Hanrahan from Slapshot. So the actor who played Hanrahan, his name was Christopher Murney. Now, Christopher Murney went on to become fabulously wealthy. He became a voice actor after that movie. And his main role, and he dined out on this, I want to say for like 15 or 20 years, he became the voice of Chester the Cheetah in the Cheetos commercial. So every single Cheetos commercial that you saw and heard, that voice was Hanrahan from the movie Slapshot. So you're saying that Igor was Hanrahan while Sergei Bobrovsky was Chester the Cheetah, the chilled out, cool guy, no matter what is happening. Is that a strained analogy, or does that land with you, Carter Hutton?
That lands with me, Jeff. That is why you are the best, because who else would be able to pull that on the spot? That's amazing. And, you know, good for him, right? Because it's a lot better than what he's getting yelled at. So to become the Cheetah guy, that's a great career.
Trust me, information like this and knowing all of it kept me single for a lot of years. Now, let me ask you one more thing. Stuart Skinner. So, you know, Skinner got the hook in the last series against the Vancouver Canucks for a couple of games. Pickard comes in, and then by the end of it, it's the Stuart Skinner show. Did it seem to you in games 6 and 7 that the Edmonton Oilers were trying their best, and we saw with all the block shots too, to kind of build up a wall around Skinner through all of it, and Vancouver squandered really good opportunities, most notably Saturday, to really do some damage to Stuart Skinner here?
Yeah, I agree completely. And that is the problem, I think, moving forward. When you talk about a team like Vancouver who struggled generating offense, then losing Besser for game 7 is I thought in game 6 that Saturday was their chance to strike. That first period, Skinner looked off. Even tracking his rebounds, nothing seemed natural, where I thought last night he looked better.
Yeah.
And this is what he's going to have to do, because literally with this Oilers team, I think every year you look at Stanley Cup champions, right? You look at goalies are usually in the conversation for the Conn Smythe, right? That just seems to be the pattern, where you look back to that Colorado run, Darcy Kemper kind of had, I believe, a 904 save percentage to win the Stanley Cup, which is, you know, a little lower than most guys are in the 920s. Their goalies are elite, where I think at Skinner's at this job at this point is to keep it at 2 or 3 goals a game. At this point, I think with Edmonton's high-powered offense, But he's gonna have to be better to instill confidence in his team, because it's hard to play that way when you're worried about a perimeter shot and you're worried about what your goalie's gonna do. You have to get into a state, I think, where you can just play. And this Dallas team, I believe, is gonna generate a lot more chances. They have a lot more depth, so the matchups are gonna be a lot tougher for the Edmonton Oilers.
Okay, last one for you. I'm curious your thoughts on this one. I'm gonna see if I can get you to bite on it. So one of my favorite intermission moments this year in the playoffs was on TNT, where Henrik Lundqvist parked a few moments to rage against the RVH that it's being used too much and it's costing teams goals. And when you heard that, and I'm assuming that you did, what went through your mind? And are you on Team Lundqvist or are you on Team RVH?
I'm on Team RVH. It's just the proper time to use it. I think at times guys just use it too much and shooters are too smart, right? Jeff, we've talked about your son being a good hockey player, right? And these guys know now, right? We know the situation. The one that I always touch on with people is last year, the tying goal before overtime, William Nylander ties it late against Bobrovsky and the Panthers. Yep. He's not even looking at the net. Is what happens, these shooters know that goalies are getting into that position at a certain landmark on the rink. So they're trained now. Once they cross a certain area, you don't even need to look at the net. Just put it in that area to do it. Mm. Now, the fact is it's a read. There's a lot of good... It creates a lot of like tools for a goalie, right? Being able to use RVH, ceiling, everything, what we can do from it. But the fact of the matter is at times it just gets used a little too often. I think Zadorov just kind of exposed that in a sense of these guys were getting into it early and he took advantage of it. So I agree with Lundqvist on one point that it gets used at times too much by guys. Yep. But I also think it's a very good tool to have. And if you don't do it nowadays as a goalie, you're really falling behind.
Excellent analysis. You're the best, man. Let's do this again real soon. This has been really informative. I really appreciate it. And a quick thought on the Ryan McDonagh trade. We're going to talk more about this in a second. But, I mean, this is a shot in the arm for the Tampa Bay Lightning. If anyone thought that Tampa was going to go away running high, not a chance.
Yeah, I love it. I think with Vasilevskiy still there and a few of their core pieces, you know, now they just get Stamkos locked up and who knows what happens down in Florida. There's going to be a lot of battles here to come.
Yeah, well, that's the big one, what happens with Stamkos here. Carter, thanks as always, pal. You be good.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
There he is, Carter Hutton from Daily Faceoff, former NHL netminder. Some really intriguing stuff there as well. And partway through that conversation with Carter Hutton, the news breaks. And that is... For those of you that don't think that there are trades during the postseason, guess what? Tampa Bay Lightning have acquired Ryan McDonagh from the Nashville Predators along with a fourth-round draft pick in 2024 in exchange for a second-round pick in 25 and a seventh-round pick in 24. First of all, I thought Tampa was flush out of all of their draft picks by this point, but you know, good on Julien Brisebois. But, I mean, this is like the more than subtle indication that, you know, what happened this season and bowing out against the Florida Panthers was not going to rest lightly and was not going to stand for Julien Brisebois, the general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I'm sure that all within that organization, like all of the state of Florida right now, as far as hockey goes, it's all about the Florida Panthers. Florida Panthers this and Paul Maurice that and Bobrovsky this and Ekblad that and Barkov's got the Selke and here's Matthew Tkachuk, the media darling, leading the team in points again, et cetera. Carter Verhaeghe this, and Sam Bennett that, and playoff guy, and Sneaky Punch, and Brad Marchand, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all anybody is hearing. And then here comes Julien Brisebois reminding everybody that we're not going anywhere. The first-round loss against Florida probably pissed them off pretty good. With that, we'll bring in Eric Erlandson, Tampa Bay Lightning insider, who joins me now to talk about the big trade. So this one was a shock. I'm in the middle. So Eric, first of all, thanks so much for stopping by again. Always good to hear your voice and see your face. So I'm in the middle of a conversation with Carter Hutton about goaltending and the Stanley Cup playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. Matty Marchese, my producer, sends me the text, boom, Tampa reacquires Ryan McDonagh. Did you see this coming at all?
No. It's, you know, you think about where the Lightning are at in terms of their cap situation, the fact that Steven Stamkos still remains unsigned as we keep an eye on July 1 and potentially being an unrestricted free agent and everything else. The last thing you're probably thinking of is bringing in a player who carries a cap hit of $6.75 million. Yeah. As important as McDonough was to this team while he was here, I mean, he was the unsung hero of yes. the two Stanley Cup championships that they had. They never wanted to part ways with him. But as we know, the salary cap comes calling for everybody, and his was just a contract that they could move when it came to signing other guys. I mean, as soon as he was moved out is when the Cirelli, the Stamkos, or the Chernak and those contracts were all signed. So, no, I didn't see this. I got a heads up about 5 minutes before it was announced, and even then I was like, are you sure about this?
Yeah, it's catching everybody here. And now I think we're sort of wondering, because you mentioned Steven Stamkos is still without contract. And I'll be honest with you, Eric, I still have a hard time wrapping my head around Steven Stamkos not being a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, I just looked at him from, like, okay, from Steven Stamkos from, like, with Tampa, from the maternity ward to the crematorium, like, he's a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning, period. Is there any, I'll get back to McDonough, but is there anything new with Stamkos here? Like, could we really be looking at a Steven Stamkos not in Tampa?
Well, the fact that we're sitting here on May 21st and he doesn't have a contract is—it's certainly a possibility. I'm with you. It's hard for me to think of this franchise moving forward without Steven Stamkos when he's still productive and, you know, doing everything that he does. He is one of those players that you just think will be with an organization for the entirety of his career and probably beyond mm-hmm. his playing days as well. That's how much he's meant to this team, this franchise, and everything else. So yeah, that possibility is still there until he's got a contract signed. But I think I just get the sense, in sort of knowing how Julian operates, as we've kind of seen him here over the past handful of years, uh-huh. that he's setting things up to make this work. And, you know, you talk about how pissed off they were losing that series to the Panthers. The biggest weakness, if you will, the biggest hole on this team was on the back end. Mm-hmm. And now Julian Brisebois has helped fill one of those holes. We'll see what this means. You can't, this cap right now is not going to be cap compliant
yes.
once we get to the start. You know, there's a long time between now and then. So there are other moves that are going to have to be made. But I think that, what was the old phrase, that Steve Yzerman was playing chess and everybody else was playing checkers? I think Julian is a little bit along those lines as well. I see this as a move that's going to be set up for other things that are going to take place between now and July 1.
Completely agree. And I feel the same way about the Nashville Predators. And I'm curious what this sets up for them. But if you're a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, I mean, unless you're Nikita Kucherov or Braden Point, you have to be saying to yourself, Victor Hedman, this is awesome. This is great. We just got Ryan McDonough back. Does that mean that I'm gone? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a good point. Because there's going to have to be salary moved out. It's just the way that the cap world works. You know, whether that's an Eric Chernak, whether that's an Anthony Cirelli, you know, somebody along those lines that, you know, you start to look, okay, 6.75 for McDonough, and, you know, Cirelli is in the high fives, low sixes. Chernak is in the mid fives. I mean, you start to talk about where those salaries fall in line. You're excited. I think that this sends a great message to the players who are here and who will be here, yeah. as well as the fan base. Everybody wants to talk about, and I know, Jeff, we've had this conversation, that the Lightning's window is closed, it's not closed.
Hmm.
You know, Stamkos, yeah, he's 34, but he is coming off a 40-goal season.
Yep.
Hedman, 33, coming off a 70-point season as a defenseman. You have Andre Vasilevsky is 30. Nikita Kucherov is 30. Braden Point is 27, 28 years old. Anthony Cirelli is 26 years old. Mikhail Sergachev is 25. This window is not closed. This is still a very good team. And as long as the guy in net remains healthy and gets back to the kind of goaltender that we're used to seeing from him, this window remains open. And I think that this move today signifies to everybody, we're not closing anything.
Yeah. You know, for one of my first thoughts when I saw the deal was, I didn't think the Tampa had any draft picks left. Like, where's Julian Brisebois getting all these draft picks? Well, they're all gone in the last couple of seasons. But here's, and I'll close on this one with you, Eric. Was this fueled by, or maybe hastened along by, the first round loss against the Florida Panthers? and the entire the hockey portion of the state of Florida now, the conversation revolves around the Panthers, where it used to revolve around the Lightning. Is that a factor here?
I don't think that part of it does. I think the fact that Florida resides in the same division as you probably does, because unless they're changing the playoff format, and none of us think that's going to happen anytime soon, you're facing, you're going to have to go through the Florida Panthers. You know, you look at that roster, you know, I look at this version of the Florida Panthers like I did the Lightning circa 2020. They just have everything. They're still young. They're hungry. They're motivated in a lot of different ways. They've got some contract situations they're going to have to sort out at the end of this season as well. But if you're going to compete for a Stanley Cup championship in the next handful of years, you're going to have to go through the Florida Panthers. It's just the way it's going to set up. So I think it was more the fact that they lost to Florida and they see how much Florida has advanced past them in the last 2 years, that I think it's as much of a reaction to that as it is to anything else. But I also think when they acquired McDonough the first time, they knew what they were missing, and that was another top defenseman. Yeah. You look at this roster the last 2 years without Ryan McDonough, you know what they were missing? Ryan McDonough.
Sure. He was the one. I always thought the answer was going to be Andre Palat. Oh, they can't afford to lose Palat now. It was Ryan McDonough. It was Ryan McDonough. Lightninginsider.com is the website to be on for all information revolving around the Tampa Bay Lightning. My guest has been Eric Erlandson, the great. Eric, thanks, pal. Thanks for jumping on very last minute. I know the minute that it happened, Maddie called you. And thanks so much for freeing up your schedule to do this. Much appreciated.
Of course. I appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for the time, man.
Eric Erlandson, Lightninginsider.com is the website to be on for information there. And Matt Marchese.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look now, but the Atlantic Division just got better. Attention Boston, attention Toronto, attention Florida. You might win the Stanley Cup this year, but the division just got better with Ryan McDonagh in it.
Yeah, I didn't have this one on my bingo card today, I'm not going to lie.
Nobody
when did. I saw it, I went, exactly like Eric's response. Did I read that right?
I'll tell you what, you know who must have been thrilled? Because he never wanted to leave, is Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in Ryan McDonagh's head, he probably thought to himself, man, that was a great time in Tampa. We had a wonderful team. We got the highest of successes, enjoyed ourselves, won Stanley Cup, but I'm never going back. It's too bad. Ryan McDonagh gets to go back.
Yeah, like even to have a two-year hiatus in a place like Nashville isn't so bad either. There are a lot worse places that you could spend 2 years than
doing a good job getting Nashville to those tax-free states. Well done there, Ryan McDonagh. Yeah. Keep your money in your jeans.
Pretty good. But like Eric said, this opens up the question like, okay, what's next? Yeah. So the Lightning have just over $5 million in cap space going into next season. Yeah. I don't think Steven Stamkos is signing for $5 million. No. So the names that were mentioned, Eric Chernak, Anthony Cirelli.
That's a fascinating one.
I know you love Anthony Cirelli, but 6.25 for not a lot of offensive production is what I struggle with.
Hang on a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know any team in the NHL, now mind you, this might be difficult to do because it's in division, who values two-way Selke trophy type top six centers?
Would it be the Boston Bruins by any chance?
That's right, the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
But I mean, listen, I say the same thing about, you know, Elias Lindholm with Vancouver and the Boston Bruins. Essentially, we know the Boston Bruins are open for business, trying to get at least one top six center.
Yep.
Again, we'll throw it out there, but I the fact that they're in the same division may complicate things, but there would be no shortage of teams lined up if you put Anthony Cirelli to market.
Even
at that number, I'm telling you, Maddie.
I don't disagree, but number. I think at that point you're trying to figure out like Steven Stamkos or Anthony Cirelli. Maybe that is the question. I do wonder about Tanner Jeannot as well. I know the ticket's not as big, but 2.665 is his number. It certainly helps get you to a place closer to signing Steven
You know where
Stamkos.
He belongs? I'll just be blunt.
Florida?
You know where he belongs? He belongs in the Metropolitan Division.
Yeah, he probably
because
does.
Everybody in the Metropolitan Division has a slugger.
Yeah, and he's a slugger.
And he is a slugger.
Who did he get with the punch in the, was it in the playoffs or just before the playoffs? He fought somebody and it was like a one punch and the guy just,
yeah,
or maybe.
He's
a beast.
Look, if you're in the Metropolitan Division, all of a sudden everybody there needs to deal with Matt Rempe. Like, it's almost like that great line, you know, Ryan Reeves, when he was, who was he talking to? The New York Rangers.
And the Tom Wilson problem?
His great line was, You have a Tom Wilson problem, and I'm the solution to your Tom Wilson problem.
He wasn't wrong.
Now everybody's got a Matt Rempe problem.
Yes, they do. Now it's the Rangers that have, they are the problem. The Empire State Building.
Yes. And so where does, if you're going to move Tanner Janot anywhere? Yeah, Metropolitan. Load up.
Those are some names that make sense.
Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, seriously. But outside of that, nobody really makes a ton of sense outside of those three guys.
Yeah, I know. But listen, it's Julien Brisebois.
Yeah, that's true. We've been, well, I mean, he can't trade Ryan McDonagh again. So Ryan McDonagh, I think, is staying in Tampa Bay this time. I think we could surmise that at least.
That's a good point. Mark Spector coming up here in about, what time do we got, Spector? Like 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
No, he's coming on in about 5 minutes.
Oh, is he? I thought we had him at 45.
No,
we got him earlier?
Yeah, we got him earlier, and then you and I can chat out of that.
All right, beautiful. Okay, let's take a break. Mark Spector on the Edmonton Oilers and their performance against the Vancouver Canucks now to the conference final. Well, they'll face off on Thursday at 8:30 Eastern against the Dallas Stars. That one should be a beauty. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you listen to your podcast, folks, you can find this property. We're back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Never in doubt. That's what all my Edmonton Oilers friends keep telling me. No, never in doubt. No need to be nervous here. Never in doubt. Game 7, game schmevin. My Oilers friends keep telling me. Mark Spector joins me now from Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. Covering the Edmonton Oilers, and he'll be covering this next round, the conference final against the Dallas Stars. Spec, how are you today? Hello, Mark Spector. Earth to Spec. We'll try to get back to Mark Spector there. I say that very much tongue-in-cheek because I can't tell you, and I've got plenty of friends that are Edmonton Oilers fans, and they spent, as my one friend told me, after the Saturday win, I'm going to spend the next 2 days of my life full of beer and stress. And I don't think that there are many other Edmonton Oilers fans that fill themselves up with anything other than that. That was a tough one. Make no mistake about it for the Edmonton Oilers. After a pretty, I'd say easy, but easier series against the Los Angeles Kings, handed to the Vancouver Canucks, they gave the Edmonton Oilers everything they asked for and more. And again, I keep coming back to this one. Even though Edmonton was all over them early and often in Game 7, and that extended all the way into the third period, I never lost this thought in the back of my mind that the Vancouver Canucks could still win that game. Mark Spector is aboard now. He joins me from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Hello, Spec. How are you?
Very well. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm good. So I said tongue-in-cheek, all my Oilers friends saying to me, oh, never in doubt, no need to be nervous, no need to be a stress ball about any of it. But put the thermometer in the marketplace. What was the thermometer reading in advance of Game 7 yesterday for Oilers fans?
Well, in advance of Game 7, yes. I think Oilers fans were pretty confident. They watched their team, you know, really take the first dominant game in the series in Game 6 at home, 5-1 win, and left zero doubt that their best game on that night was enough. And then you're nervous. It's Game 7. Stuff happens. But I think, you know, generally speaking, the Oilers fan was feeling that their team could go in and win that game, I would say.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Game 7 and Game 6 to a lot as well, you know, I think people look at Game 6 and say, you know, how could the Vancouver Canucks, and I agree with Kevin Bieksa on this one, how could the Vancouver Canucks not look at Game 6 and say, this is the house money game. We've got a home game in our hip pocket on Monday. Why not just go out, play as hard as you can, and just see what happens? Instead, the opposite happened. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Edmonton. They did a great job defensively, kind of put a wall up around Stuart Skinner. But still, did you not look at Saturday and say about Vancouver, wow, what a missed opportunity that was?
Yeah, I think you wanted more from Vancouver. There's no doubt. But you know what? And this isn't just an Edmonton guy talking. I'm looking at the Edmonton Oilers saying, if we don't play our best, our season's over.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you that the way the Canucks played had a lot to do with the way Edmonton played. I think I'm blaming Edmonton more than I'm blaming the Canucks.
Yeah.
You know, this is a young Canucks team that, like, most of their main guys have never been here. They've never won a series or seized a series. I mean, the Nashville series they won, but my point is they're not experienced at this, and Edmonton is. Edmonton's come back from down 3-2, and they've won game sevens in very recent years. They're not old memories. They're fresh ones. So Edmonton had the experience, and that experience, frankly, showed a great deal in games 6 and 7.
You know, coming out of any series, really, there are always emerging stars. And I've talked today in previous days about, you know, the emerging star here is Evan Bouchard. We know all about Draisaitl and McDavid, et cetera, Zach Hyman. To me, the emerging star right now is Evan Bouchard. And it's not just the Bouch bomb either. Although, listen, when it comes to the bag of tricks, I mean, that's a pretty good one to have. Having a shooting threat at the top of the points on the power play is a nice thing to have, not just someone that distributes. But when you see Bouchard's game right now, because you've seen from the root to the fruit with this guy, what do you see, Spec?
Well, the biggest difference now is, like, you used to have to shelter Evan Bouchard. You couldn't play him against certain people on the other team if you wanted to, you know, you're trying to win. If you're up 3-2, he didn't play much. You know, if you're down 3-2, he played a ton.
Yeah.
That's changed now. So now you can get Evan Bouchard to 26, 27 minutes in a hockey game. Mm. You couldn't get him there before unless you were chasing the game all night, right?
Yep.
But now, a game like last night, not only does he help you get the 3-0 lead, but when it turns into 3-2, he's out there defending it. And that's what we haven't seen in this guy. I want to say to you, Jeff, you and I and you and many have had the conversation of how many true number one defensemen are there among the 32 national
hockey teams.
We've all had it.
Yeah.
The number's like 17 or whatever the number we all argue over. I think we're going to, you know, when this thing ends here, I think there's one more. I think that now you've got a true number one defenseman in Edmonton that they have not had. Darnell Nurse is not one.
Yeah.
They've not had one. I think they have one now. Is that fair to say?
And what I wonder about with Bouchard, because we always talk about, you know, mentoring players along the way. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much has Matthias Ekholm meant to the development of Evan Bouchard?
Oh, 14. You know, and don't there in my little market out in Edmonton, the Duncan Keith experiment was poo-pooed by many, and I'm not going to relitigate it. But, you know, a year playing with Duncan Keith didn't hurt either, my friend.
Yeah.
Right. The kid plays with Duncan Keith and then he plays with Matthias Ekholm. Like, that's development, man. And I'm going to give the general manager some credit here. You know, the finished product of Evan Bouchard, you know, he gets 90% of the credit, but those two guys have a ton to do with it. And Ekholm, I mean, Ekholm is we all know how good he is, and he's smart, and he's nurturing, and he knows what to say and when, and he doesn't talk much. So, yeah, big help, Matthias Ekholm, for sure.
Do you think, though, that this is, you mentioned, you know, the finished product that is Evan Bouchard. Do you think this is, like, this is it? Like, this is the finished product? Because I still see more with Evan Bouchard.
Oh, for sure. How old is he? I should know this. Is he 24 or something?
23? Yeah.
23?
I'll have a look.
You know? Yeah, whatever. Oh, for sure. He's a defenseman. Defenseman. Like, in their own zone, he's still got much to learn and much to get better at. The thing about Evan Bouchard, 24, I think what Evan Bouchard is, first of all, he's a smart player. He's a heady player. I have watched NHL hockey for many, many years. I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy who never looks at his stick or the puck as much as Evan Bouchard. Like, his head is up. The one thing he's got that, as great a looking player as Quinn Hughes is, Evan Bouchard's like 6'3", right?
Yep.
Evan Bouchard could comfortably get to 220 as a grown man here in his mid-20s. So that guy, he's going to be able to defend once he gets his head around defending. So you got a guy that one day will be a better defender. You got a guy who really makes a great pass out of his zone. You got a guy who could skate it out of his zone when he has to. You got a guy who runs your power play and can distribute it. And you got the same guy who has more 90-mile-an-hour shots than any other player in the league by about 30%.
Yeah.
So, and he just set a record for 20 points in 2 playoff rounds that no man has ever accomplished in the history of our league. you know, that's a lot of stuff, man. That's a package. And somehow they're going to have to pay this guy one day soon. But we'll get to that deal down the road.
I think they'd be only too happy if they have to pay him commensurate with his production. And it does something to their salary cap. It's a nice problem to have. So how does this team, in your estimation, you're there every game, every practice, all of it, on ice, off ice. How does this team match up against Dallas? Because most people are looking at this one and saying, listen, Dallas just took care of the defending Stanley Cup champions, beat the Stanley Cup champions from the year previous, and are looking like a buzzsaw. Yeah. How does Edmonton match up against maybe the deepest team in the playoffs?
Yeah, they're different. I mean, Edmonton is going to need more from the bottom end of the lineup. We know that for sure. Yeah. Edmonton has the best high-end talent, you know, up front, right? They don't, you know, Bouchard and Heiskanen, are they equal to each other? I don't know. For the purposes of this conversation, we'll say yes, I'm not sure they are. Mm. Edmonton has a higher-end forwards. Dallas has deeper-end forwards. Dallas has more older forwards, I'd say to you. They got some old guys and some young guys.
Yep.
Edmonton's got a bunch of guys in their 25 to 28 range, maybe, you know, 30, let's say. So they're not the same team. In fact, they're quite opposite when you break them down. So, you know, what wins? High-end talent wins, or does depth win? Do the top lines cancel each other out, or does Dallas have a top line that can cancel out Edmonton's top two lines? I don't know the answer to that. I'm asking the question. So, you know, the biggest disparity most people, our listeners today, would say is in goal. Ottinger's better than Skinner. Yeah. Can Skinner raise his game? And can he saw off that matchup? Because if he can, that gets you halfway there maybe, right?
The one thing that I wonder about here is the health of Roope Hintz, who is someone who's in, you know, the Selke conversation when you want to talk about, you know, a player that can skate and has size and can produce and can help shut down. Player. Like, if you have not watched the Dallas Stars, do yourself a favor, folks. Watch Roope Hintz. But the health is an issue here. To me, that's the wild card, obviously, in this series. What about you, Speck?
Yeah, I mean, health is always a wild card. And I want to echo your statement. Roope Hintz is one of the great players in our league that a lot of people don't know about. Yep. He's got a funny name, and he plays in Dallas. That doesn't, you know, a lot of guys go, Roope who? But he's a fantastic player. Health is the thing. How's Drysdale's back? You know, I don't know. I'm here to tell you, I think Connor McDavid is at best at 80%.
Yeah.
Like, I just watched 7 games, and in 5 of them, he wasn't the fastest player on the ice. Mm-hmm. And when McDavid's not the fastest player on the ice, something's wrong, because he has been for the last 7 years. I've seen there's a couple of signature moves that he makes that I didn't see in this playoff series. Yeah. I'm telling you, he's not right. So is it an injury that he's got to carry for the next, hopefully, month for him? Is it an injury that gets better? I have no clue. That's one of the wild cards, right? Yeah. You know, so sometimes your best guys go down and sometimes they don't. And sometimes that's the difference in a playoff series.
We mentioned Bouchard. Anyone else stand out for you from the Oilers in that last round against Vancouver?
Speaking of emerging players, there's a young Dylan Holloway that looks like he's ready to take a bigger bite here. You know, that's good. I would say to you that Ryan McLeod went the other way, and I'm not just talking about the mistake he made last night.
The high stick?
The giveaway on the made it 3-1, right?
Oh, the Garland goal. Yeah.
He fanned on the pass, Garland scores, and all hell breaks loose. I mean, that's just one play. I'm not going to pin a guy for one play. He made a bad play. It happens. Everyone makes a bad play. Sure. I didn't like his game in a physical series. He was a perimeter player. I think he needs to get inside and play harder. And I think one of the last guys that probably deserves a shout out here, because Darnell Nurse gets murdered for his salary, and he gets murdered for the analytics because he never plays with McDavid anymore. And he plays against the toughest people in all the worst situations. And frankly, they get outscored and outshot and outpossessed all the time. And you know who's on the ice holding a meeting last night in a TV timeout when it's a tense, tense moment, man. He gathered that team together. He said what needed to be said. And they weathered a storm that most teams haven't weathered against Vancouver this spring.
Yeah.
I put a shout out to Darnell Nurse. This is a team that allowed 3 goals total in game 6 and 7. And I don't care what you think about Nurse's game, he's got a lot to do with that.
Good for you. Listen, on that, we'll let you go. Listen, I love it. Listen, I'm a big fan of the Nurse family. I think that's not exactly a secret here. Speck, thanks as always. Enjoy the conference final. The Oilers facing off against the Stars. We'll check back regular.
All right. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Mark Spector from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. You know, Maddie, one of the things that was interesting yesterday was watching, I don't know if this is like the most we're going to see, Knobloch animated, but after that second goal goes in and it's 3-2, you saw him try to calm everyone down on the bench and remind everybody like how we're playing here. Like, we're getting the puck down low and we're going to pin it. Mm-hmm. And no pucks go towards our net. I don't care if you're 10 feet away or 200 feet away. Nothing's going that way. No passes back to the point. Nothing like that. And he was, and it was like going through player to player to player. It was the most animated that I've seen Knobloch. And they did it. Like, you look at how the Oilers shut down Vancouver, and you can hear the frustration on the fans. Like, just dying for Vancouver to generate anything. And the Edmonton Oilers either kept icing it, chipping it, or keeping it along the boards and freezing it. Whether it's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, whether it's Connor McDavid, didn't matter. Everyone knew their assignment at the end to sit on that game.
Everybody bought into winning, right? Like, that's what it kind of felt like. They bought it. This is what is going to win us the game here. Because we saw throughout the series that there was no lead that was safe. Regardless of how Edmonton was playing, it didn't feel like any
Vancouver
lead was
could
safe.
Come back. That's Vancouver's story all year long.
100%. So that's why you really saw, I mean, we saw this over, and I keep going back to that 16-game winning streak that they went on. But the reason why I do is because we saw the Edmonton Oilers showed us that they could play a style that could win in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That was good defense, solid goaltending, or goaltending good enough, and playing a certain way in front of said goaltender.
Yeah.
And that is conducive to winning in the playoffs. And we saw that yesterday. But for Chris Knobloch to get animated, it is really interesting because
Weird. He
is very even keel. Like,
there is no,
it is straight line, and there is not a lot of animation. Maybe that is what this team needed to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, and again, not a slight against Jay Woodcroft, because if Connor McDavid and Matthias Ekholm are healthy at the beginning of the year and they get a save, we may not even be having this conversation.
Yep.
But I think it speaks to the job that Chris Knobloch has done with this group and the way that they played in this series. They were the better team for large stretches of this series.
Yep.
I know that's easy to say when you win a series, but Vancouver just didn't look like they had it last night. And a lot of that has to do with the way Edmonton played.
Okay, so we have the Edmonton Oilers facing off against the Dallas Stars. We have the Florida Panthers facing off against the New York Rangers. So we have Chris Knobloch and Pete DeBoer.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Laviolette and Paul Maurice. Anything you noticed here in these four coaches?
Well, two of them coach for the Hurricanes. I know that.
Only one of them has won the Stanley Cup before.
That would be Peter Laviolette.
And that's Peter Laviolette. And as we've mentioned countless times here on this show, whenever we talk about, well, most recently today, when we talked about Craig Berube earlier on,
yep.
And there's only been three coaches that have ever won the Stanley Cup with multiple teams. Scotty Bowman did it with three teams, Montreal Canadiens, Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Detroit Red
Wings. He doesn't count.
Peter Laviolette is the only one that could be number four.
Yeah.
Everybody else is a first-timer. Cats win. Congratulations, Paul Maurice. Be a lot of people, myself included, be really
Same
happy
here.
For Paul Maurice.
Same here.
Chris Knobloch?
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Man, this is easy.
Yeah, I could do this every year.
Stanley Cup, the Cup's easy. And Pete DeBoer,
who's been to a final and never won.
And countless times he's got teams to the conference final as well. And there'll be a lot of people happy if Pete DeBoer and the Dallas Stars end up winning this thing. We'll see. More on the matchups and the conference finals coming up on tomorrow's program. I want to thank a lot of people today. I want to thank Mark Spector, Carter Hutton, Elliot Friedman, Kristen Shilton as well. I want to thank Matt Marchese. Thank you, Maddie. I want to thank our producer, David Siss, Lance Kennedy, and Jen Rolnick all for helping out here. Okay. You get a night off. Do something. You know, go for a walk. Do something. Maybe stay away from hockey for a little while. Because come tomorrow, we're right back into it on this show, 22 hours from now, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, wherever you get your podcasts.